You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. Now let's welcome your host, Dean Dynamo Kelly.
Are you a fan of wrestling merch? Do you like to wear the latest WWE and UFC shirts? Well, if you're in Ireland, there's only one place to go for all of your wrestling and MMA needs. Wrestling Mania. That's right, Wrestling Mania, located on the top floor of St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre in the heart of Dublin's First City, is the only place you need to go. Wrestling Mania has everything you need, from t-shirts, hoodies, hats, wristbands, mugs, pendants, and everything in between. And if you're like me, a fan of wrestling history and memorabilia, then you never know what you may find. From action figures, huge back catalogs of books, magazines, DVDs, and all kinds of retro items. Shop for brands like WWE, Tap Out, UFC, Ring of Honor, AEW, and much, much more. And much more than that, Wrestling Mania is a family-run business and Ireland's oldest wrestling shop that has seen superstars such as Bret the Hitman Hart, Chris Jericho, Finn Balor, Becky Lynch, Dana White, and many, many more pass through its doors. So why not get down to Wrestling Mania today? You never, ever know what you may find. But get this, if you need a purchase coming up to the holiday season and can't make it to the store, don't worry. They've got you covered. Wrestling Mania will deliver directly to your doorstep. And if you can make it to the store today, Wrestling Mania will give you 20% off all purchases over 50 euro. That's right. For listening to Dynamo's Dozen, you get 20% off all purchases over 50 euro. What do I have to do, you say? Well, let me tell you something, Daddy. All you need to do is join the mailing list. Leave your name at dynamosdozen@gmail.com. Send me an email with your name. Hashtag wrestling store, hashtag dynamosdozen. That is it. And you get 20% off all purchases over 50 euro. For more information, once again, go to dynamosdozen@gmail.com to be on the mailing list, or go to Wrestling Mania Facebook page on the latest news and arrivals. Get down to Wrestling Mania today.
It's Friday the 13th, and welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh socks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. It is Dynamo's Dozen again, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Ian the Dynamo Kelly, and today, once again, we are going to get straight into the main event of the show. This week, I will be sitting down with Hannibal from Hannibal TV, the incredible YouTube shoot interview series. Really, really in-depth interview with Hannibal himself. Get to know the man behind the frown, and get to know the man behind the microphone. This is Dynamo's Dozen. You are all very welcome back. So here we are once again on Dynamo's Dozen, and I have a really, really special guest today. One of the kings of the shoot interview, but also one of the kings of the shoot. Mr. Hannibal. Hannibal, welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, and thank you for taking the time out to come on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. I was actually supposed to wrestle in Ireland back in 2008, but it didn't end up working out. It was going to be for Irish Whip Wrestling, so the least I could do is do a podcast for someone in Ireland.
I worked for Irish Whip at one point. I think we all kind of had our hand in Irish Whip at some point. Yeah, Irish Whip used to bring over a lot of big kind of American and Canadian stars back in the day. I think you were probably coming over. You're probably due to be on a tour around the time that Vampiro and stuff like that was on.
Yeah, I think I still have the poster. It was Raven was on that tour.
Sure. Yeah.
I was in England at the time wrestling for All Star, but I didn't last for All Star. I couldn't take the way we were being treated, so I went back to Canada before my time with Irish Whip was supposed to happen, unfortunately.
Well, who knows? At that time, it may have been better. It may not have been, so I don't know. Yeah, All-Star, actually, I remember that. There was a number of guys that kind of dropped out at that time, so I doubt you were alone in in that particular... Yeah,
I think the breaking point was when Brian Dixon made the rule that we couldn't close the blinds in the house anymore. When getting back home at 6 a.m. and the sun is blaring into your room, and he makes a rule that we can't touch the blinds. That was just too much for me.
And the thing about it is, even if you were drunk and on gimmicks or whatever at that time, that's probably worse when the sun is coming in the morning, because that's when you start to really feel like a vampire. So that's when you really need the blinds down. Yeah.
I think I ended up drinking more than I normally did in those. I think I was there about 6 or 7 weeks, but it's hard not to get involved with the drinking when you're driving the 4 to 7 hours a day and wrestling twice a day.
Especially when you're in the UK and Ireland, my friend, it's a thing. You know what I mean? That's all I can tell you. That's all I can tell you. So Hannibal, my friend, you everybody knows your work, obviously for a lot of the shoot interviews that you do, but also not just for the shoot interviews you do. You do a lot of great. Kind of stuff on your promotion in terms of how you promote your own stuff also, matches, upcoming shows, whatever it may be. So it's really, really big business, and it's a really great business that you have, and I salute you. We will obviously come to that, but one of the things I'm interested in talking to you, because it's one of my favorite kind of things to watch, is your amateur wrestling background, because that's kind of, you started out as an amateur wrestler, right? In Canada.
Yeah, but I only got into amateur wrestling because I wanted to be a professional wrestler.
I
heard that was a good way of going about it. And yeah, I ended up winning the provincials a couple of times and winning the nationals. Then I took a long break from it, and then I went back and I got second at the Olympic trials, like after being out of the sport for 10 years. So I've dabbled in it here and there. I wish I had taken it further when I was younger, but I decided to go into pro wrestling. But I still love amateur wrestling, but the town I'm living in right now doesn't have a good place to train, so I've kind of stopped training in it the last several years. I still do some martial arts here and there.
Sure.
But yeah, amateur wrestling, I had a good career there for sure. I'm very proud that I got the national championship back in 2001.
And so you should be. So you should be. One of the things, I guess, even though when you got into pro wrestling, you did do some MMA as well, I guess. Well, some martial arts. So am I right? You done some fights?
Grappling. I've won the Canadian Open in grappling and won a bunch of grappling tournaments.
Okay.
I was actually scheduled to have an MMA fight around the same time that my contract fell through. And then at that time, it was about a little under 10 years ago now, I had a health condition, so I didn't end up getting licensed for the fight. I could be licensed to fight MMA now, but I haven't had the right offer, and now I'm in a better financial position, so I'm not going
to... You don't need to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would do it for the right price, though, but not for the $600 that I had agreed to for the first fight that I was supposed to do.
And most definitely not with Billy Jack Haynes. Definitely not. Definitely not.
No, I mean, he's admitted it himself now that at this point in his career and with the health issues he has, that wouldn't be a wise thing for him to do. And I would never want to hurt him, to be honest.
No. I agree. I think everybody's seen that video. I think I've seen the video and I was like, please, Billy, come on, just chill. Just chill. And to be fair, you kind of masqueraded in the emotion that I was feeling at that time. I was like, that's cool, Hannibal. you're doing a good job there. Please just be cool. But
well, the whole point was I wasn't even supposed to do that interview, and I had heard some of his exaggerations before. We've since cleared the air, but it was supposed to be David Penzer doing that interview, and he didn't show up that day. And he still wanted me to do the interview for him. Mm. And then I did it. And then the worst part about it was they canceled Billy Jack Haynes' appearance that was supposed to promote, because they were upset with how that interview turned out. So he lost the payday out of it. So that was the unfortunate thing. I didn't think that really how that interview went had anything to do with...
No.
Like the autograph appearance, other than maybe bringing some more attention to it. So I feel bad he lost a payday there.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, for anybody that hasn't seen the interview, I mean, most people have. It's been a big story. You know what I mean? We're not covering uncovered ground here. It's just one of those things. You know, at the end of the day, Hannibal, you're a pretty loyal guy. You're good friends with you know, a lot of people that, especially, you know, Steve Austin and stuff like that. That was kind of getting, I guess, been given a bit of a bad name and been spoken about in a bad light. So at the end of the day, you were being a loyal friend. You didn't even do it in an aggressive way, in my opinion. I don't even think you've done it in an aggressive way at all. So, look.
And I also heard from Steve Austin's ex-wife, who I am friends with.
Yeah.
She hasn't even spoken to Billy Jack Haynes in 30 years, since the time they were married. So for him to make those assumptions, whatever happened with Deborah is one thing, but for him to make those assumptions on someone else that he hasn't even spoken to.
I mean, she lived in England for years, like Jeannie and stuff like that. So, I mean...
She still does.
Yeah,
she
so, I mean... So, guys and girls, I'm just going to say it out there. Billy Jack Haynes, back in the day, great wrestler, great look, but yeah. Definitely not in the right.
See, I believe that he does have CTE, like a pretty severe case of it, because
yeah, me too.
Just the way he thinks and talks. Unfortunately, I actually did a shoot interview with him last weekend.
Is that with the new hair that he's got?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he has a new haircut that people have enjoyed making fun of. One of the popular ones, he looks like Friar Tuck a little bit, among other people. But yeah, I noticed from interviewing him that unfortunately he's been hitting the head a lot, and that shows for sure.
And at the end of the day, guys and girls, you know, it's easy to sit back and laugh, and you know, at the end of the day, it's one of those things that can happen. You know what I mean? I think it's just. It's just one of those things, I guess. It is what it is. But we'll move along. So when you obviously got into, because I've watched some of your work. Obviously, I'd been around at the time you were kind of, you were working over in Canada. And I was lucky enough to have access, I guess, back in the early 2000s to late 2000s to a lot of VHS from Canada. So I would have seen a lot of your work. I had contacts up in Calgary as well, so, you know, you were a big, big guy. I mean, 6'5", 280, 290, big, strong.
Yeah, sometimes in those Calgary days and Puerto Rico days, I was closer to 300 back in those
okay,
days.
Okay, yeah.
But my cardio was nowhere near what it is now.
Oh, well, yeah, you're looking lean as a motherfucker right now. But then again, your hair was pretty long back then, so you could afford to do less when your hair was like that, you know?
That's true.
It's a thing, isn't it? It is a thing. You know what I mean? You always notice guys kind of slower when they've the long hair and do more when they've got the shaven head. It's like, I don't know.
Well, I didn't have a choice in the matter. That Mother Nature took its course.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And so, did you get your start in Calgary under Bruce?
Yeah, I started in Calgary. Then I ran out of money, and I trained a little bit with Jacques Rougeau back in the area of Canada where I'm from, which is cross country. Then I saved up again. And then went back to Calgary and then stayed out there a good 3 or 4 years the second time I went out. So that was training mostly with Bruce.
And how was Bruce in the sense, like, did he kind of... The reason I'm asking you this is because I've got a story that involves Bruce also from my end. But I had read the Dynamo Kids book, so I was really kind of skeptical about coming over. So I'm actually interested to see... you know, how it was training with Bruce at that time? Was it a case that, oh, you're going to be training in the dungeon? Or was it what you expected, is the question.
Oh, well, other than in the summer months, they would set up the ring outside. It was in the dungeon. And his training was more technical than Jacques Rougeau's. Jacques Rougeau's was more the entertainment portion of wrestling. Where
that makes sense.
Yeah, with Bruce, TJ was there, Natty, Harry, Ted, Johnny Devine, who was in TNA for a while, Rick Victor was there. So there was a lot of great wrestlers there, beating me up most of the time in those days because I was the young one. But you learned how to bump in the dungeon because the floor was pretty unforgiving.
Yeah, so looked that way.
Definitely had a bump, right? Yeah. But yeah, I was. I wouldn't say back when Stu ran it, it was probably more technical. There was a lot of chops, a lot of slaps in the face, a lot of bumping. But I think I learned how to wrestle from the dungeon, so I have no issues with Bruce. But he definitely had a unique way of training, a very unorthodox way of training for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, look, at the end of the day, you came out and became a very good wrestler from that training. So therefore, you know, your training was good. No, my story was, I remember years ago, I think it was in 2002, 2003, I had sent an email to the Hart Brothers Wrestling Camp here from Ireland. This is at a time when I had a friend of mine, a fellow trainee, who was the only guy in the gym that had access to the internet. You know, 2003.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah, so it was like, oh, we'd send an email. Wow, yeah, so we can get an email sent quicker than writing one? And he was like, yeah, sure. So I remember sitting one day coming back from, I think it was a night out on the beer, and I got a phone call on the old mobile phone, the old little Nokia.
Yeah.
And I answered the phone, and it was like, hey, is this Ian Kelly? And I was like, it is. Who's this? And
he
was
like, good impression.
Thank you. But he was like, I'll never forget it as long as I live. I was like, this is Bruce Hart calling. And I was like, fuck off. that was the first thing I said. And he was like, no, it is. Because there was a couple of guys in the gym with us that used to do impressions that were pretty cool at doing the impressions. So I was like, someone's working me here. Someone's winding me up. So this was going back and forth, and I got the brainwave to go, why don't I just look at the number? And I realized it wasn't a local Irish number, it was a Canadian number, and I went, oh, hi, sir. After going back and forth and saying, ah, fuck off, that's not you, I was like, oh, hello, hi, sir. Then I became formal, I guess, about 3 minutes into the call. But I guess to cut a long story short, it was Bruce, you know, told me, oh, we'll come over, we'll take care of you, and blah, blah, blah. And I was only 18 years old. I was like, I read Dynamo Kid's book, and he did say that you offered him 400, but gave him 100. And that was at a time when business was booming. Business isn't booming anymore. I don't want to go over to Calgary and be fucked, you know? So that's kind of my Bruce story. But
yeah, and I was there in those days, and I can assure you business was not booming. I've told this story before that I remember TJ getting paid once in a handful of change, and he threw the change across the dressing room, and he knew there was a small crowd, but give me a break. Just say you can't pay me. Don't pay me with like a handful of quarters. And But yeah, there were some pretty dark days considering the talent was really good then, but sure, the independent scene was not booming, particularly in Calgary.
What do you think? I mean, obviously I made the right choice, though. But what do you think it was? I mean, because especially Calgary, I mean, even in a time when WWE was booming, Calgary was still booming. I mean, you had the likes of the Bulldogs that could go and say, right, Vince, I'm going back to Calgary and we're going to wrestle there. We're going to do a few shots here and there. Bad News would also do the same. You know, they'll do shots in Stampede. What do you think actually changed around that time? I mean, surely the fans were still there. Was it just the business not being run in the same way, or?
Well, by that time, I guess it would have been Bruce and Ross running it. So maybe, and then there was the whole thing with Brett. There was a lot of turmoil in the Hart family at that time because Brett was upset, for instance, that Bruce had brought Stu back to some tapings. And then there was issues with Davey's family, and not only Bruce, but also Brett, due to some comments Brett had written in the newspaper about Davey. So there was what wasn't like the Harts were functioning as a unit to promote Stampede Wrestling. And they also weren't running the Pavilion at that time. They were running the Ogden Legion, which is basically a small legion that could hold maybe 400 at absolute capacity. Yeah. And it wasn't reaching that. There was many nights it was under 100.
And the thing about like the likes of Brett was he was probably pretty much a straight shooter. And probably too much of a straight shooter with them. I guess it was probably a lot of jealousy and stuff like that also involved, and you know what I mean?
Bad promotion, too. I actually got my start promoting for Stampede Wrestling as a promoter because we would go to some of these shows and there'd be very few people at the shows. So I started promoting out-of-town shows for them.
Oh, really? And
yeah, I started doing that, and we would get bigger than normal crowds promoting the out-of-town shows, and when I promoted them, I also got a cut of the gate.
Nice.
So
yeah,
instead of making $20 or $50, I could make sometimes $300 or $400. It still wasn't that much, but I was making better money as a wrestler to help promote. And I think the last big Stampede Wrestling event was in 2005 or 2006 was a big event I promoted that had 500 fans, but that goes to show you in those days 500 was a huge crowd. Sure. And that was actually Harry and TJ's last Stampede Wrestling match on that show, as well as my last Stampede Wrestling match. Harry and TJ fought each other on that show.
Yeah, I've actually seen that match. That match was available. It could be still available on YouTube.
Yeah,
but I remember that was a hell of a match. That was the goodbye match before they basically kind of moved on. That was and in fairness, that was around the time I was talking to the likes of Bronwyn, you know, down to my kid's daughter and stuff, and that wrestling was pretty hot there for a while, and it looked like the boom was back up. So fair play to you, my friend. That was obviously you. So I guess that's a good little segue into a question. Did you always feel maybe kind of into your wrestling career that maybe the promoting side of things was something that you were good at? How did you know that you were good at it? Was it just something that came naturally, or?
Well, when I was a kid, I would promote events in my parents' backyard. I would have my own backyard wrestling, but I would like the last one that we did, we had 80 people in the backyard, and that's when my parents said, "You're not doing this anymore because it's getting too out of hand." The neighbors were complaining and stuff. So I was always a bit of a promoter. And then the reason why I got into promoting was because I don't like wrestling to make $50 or $100, which is what you get on the independent scene.
Very true.
And I realized, started doing it with Stampede Wrestling, I could make more if I was promoting. And then when I went back to my end of Canada, it's the same thing. I don't want to wrestle for drive 4 hours to make a small amount of money, basically your gas money back. I'd rather promote and get a bigger piece of the pie, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I mean, so obviously that was when you obviously started to promote some shows for Stampede. That obviously kind of lit the light bulb, I guess, in the brain for where the business came from. It because now Hannibal TV is obviously, you know, a very, very good business.
Yeah, we're actually by far, there's no one even close, the most popular wrestling YouTube channel in Canada.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
We're doing well. We have Great North Wrestling, which is the company that I run, but we also put matches on from other companies as well. So we're pretty open to airing almost anything on this channel.
That's awesome. And you know, like I said, I've kind of seen Hannibal TV from, you know, say 6-7 years ago to where it is now, and it's just grown exponentially, you know what I mean? It's
started crazy. Off as just posting Great North Wrestling matches, and then we found out that I had some old interview footage that they didn't they did a documentary on me, and they had some footage that they never used from the documentary that they just gave to me to use how I wanted. And I put some of the interview clips up, and it turned out...
Was that the Lanny Poffo thing?
That was part of the documentary, but they never used it in the documentary.
Yeah, yeah, because I remember, actually, before you, you know, when I told one of the fans, actually, that I was going to be doing an interview today, they were like, yeah, did you ever see that time that Hannibal fucked up Lanny Poffo? And I was like, well, yeah, I did, but... So yeah, that was a thing.
They should have put that in the movie, but I guess they didn't feel it was appropriate. But yeah, that the funny thing is about Landy and I is we were friends after that, and he had signed papers and everything to allow footage of him to be used in the movie and so forth. But once that was posted online, people at conventions started asking him about it and so forth. So he wanted me to take it down. And I was like, there's no way I'm taking that down. That's the most entertaining thing you've done in years.
That was the so most entertaining, yeah.
Because of that. We're actually enemies because I won't take that down.
And he could have created a business because, guys, like anybody that hasn't seen it, it is a brilliant piece of footage. I mean, you know, when I say a brilliant piece of footage, it's not... Well, yeah, it is a brilliant piece of footage. It's basically, you know, he basically started the thing and slapped you in the face a couple of times and you took him down. I mean, from where I was trained over in NWA Hammerlock, you know, the old British shoot style, it was took him down and got him in like a kind of an underhook. But no, not an underhook, like a grommet.
Yeah, a version of a wrist lock type thing.
Yeah, and that was it. But I mean, you let go and just said, listen, calm down, dude. You're actually being the peaceful one in this. You're saying, dude, just stop hitting me. I'm defending myself. And but the best part about it is Honky Tonk Man is the honky motherfuckers. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, the unfortunate part about that is it was just a misunderstanding because he told me before that match that he wanted to possibly be a future opponent of mine and maybe we could do a program together. So he said, treat this match like you would treat any other. So I did, and I didn't think it was that bad, but I guess what the issue was they had lost his gear and his luggage on the flight.
Okay.
Now, Lanny's a weird guy. I've seen him wrestle without boots on. I've seen him wrestle in shorts.
Oh, so he's gone full on, you know, world class championship wrestling on it. Like he's gone barefoot.
And when I saw him in the ring that night, he was in his street clothes. And I just thought, okay, Lanny sees it's a small crowd. He doesn't want to get his gear on. He's just going to wrestle me in street clothes. But I guess the reason why he was in the street clothes was those were the only clothes he had with him for the weekend. So he was mostly mad at me because I ripped the shirt and I didn't know that he didn't have another shirt. I ended up giving him a shirt and he was fine. He could have just asked for a new shirt.
Yeah, I mean,
have been happy to buy him one. But whatever, that was unfortunate.
But that's cool that you guys made up. Like, I was just more afraid that the Macho Man was going to come and kick your ass, to be honest with you. He was
still alive when that happened, actually. We didn't release it till years after. He was still alive when that incident took place.
He was probably just like, "Oh, Lenny, don't act like an asshole then, huh?"
But the thing is, as I said, I was at a convention. I did lots of interviews last weekend at Icons of Wrestling in Philadelphia. People can look it up. Lanny was there and he didn't say a word to me. Like, we were friends in the years after that, but once that video went out on the internet, he now hates me. But as I said, it's entertaining. It has hundreds of thousands of hits.
Well, I was very entertained by it. And to be honest with you, from my standpoint, listen, I like I like Lanny Poffo as a character and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, now that we actually see the footage and the reason for for Lanny ending up face down on the cold ground is because, he struck someone, and someone that was much better than him. It's very, very simple,
As I said, he just had to say, "Hey, you ripped my shirt. Buy me a new shirt. I lost my luggage." It would have been that simple.
You weren't in the wrong. That happens in Ireland every weekend, my friend. So,
I don't doubt it. That's not the only incident I've had like that.
Give me another one.
There's been a few over the years.
Give me a good one.
I don't know if I could talk about them for legal reasons.
Okay, well then don't give me another one. You can tell me off air, and then that's fine, yeah. But there was one
where I was, that I can talk about, that I was doing a co-promoted event with another company, and they weren't being honest with me. And I was wrestling their champion in the ring that night, and I put on a move similar to that.
Okay.
A submission hold, but I am a grappler, and I know how to put on a hold to make someone submit, but actually not break their arm.
Sure, yeah. Just put enough pressure to not, to hurt them, but make them feel like their arm is about to be ripped off.
Yeah, so due to the business disagreement that I had with these people basically ripping me off, then they put me, even though I had invested money in that event, they put me in a match with their champion and they wanted me to lose to their champion. And I just decided that I'm not going to lose this match. So basically, I made the guy submit. But again, I didn't crank on the arm. I basically told him to submit. He submitted. He knew that I was going to break the arm if he didn't submit. But the funniest thing was, the company had it informed their announcer or music person what the finish was supposed to be, so they actually played my music on the way out, and the announcer announced me as the champion. So I still consider myself the Quebec champion because I won it that night.
You got to be the Quebec champion.
I never lost it.
You got to be. Actually, one of the videos I remember, I believe it was you, and this is probably early on, if I'm not mistaken, you were interviewing Jacques Rougeau while he was getting a haircut, right?
Oh, that was my third interview I ever did.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. See, that's how you know I'm not bullshitting, my friend. I've watched all these. Now, listen, I will just put a little bit of context on this show. For me personally, and for a lot of my listeners, like, Dynamite Kid would be considered, a hero over here in terms of his work, in terms of how he was. And also, I know his family, a lot of, and I like to put a bit of context on the narrative as well. Because over in North America and Canada, all you ever hear is the stories of Dynamo Kid being a bully, you know? And I think that interview was pretty cool because, in fairness to Jacques Rougeau, he did kind of say, look, he's just a normal guy. It was just circumstances, you know what I mean? He didn't completely bury him. I don't know. I've never heard Jacques talk about his death or anything like that. But obviously, we did lose Dynamite, you know, back last Christmas as well. But in terms of what Dynamo Kid did for the industry, in terms of his in-ring ability, I'm sure nobody will ever argue that. Would I be right in saying that?
Oh, for sure. And he's a popular subject on my interviews, and I have a whole playlist of Dynamite Kid on my channel, the Hannibal TV, and you get both sides of it. Definitely, he was a bully to some, but there was also a good side of him that comes out in other interviews. So, but there was a lot of bullying. He wasn't the only bully back in the 80s.
Oh, hell no.
He was on a lot of steroids too, admittedly. And of course, when you have that much testosterone pumping through you, you're going to act a little erratically.
You're going to whoop someone's ass. You know what I mean?
And I think it was literally about a year ago that he passed away. Like
It was. I was actually very lucky. I think it's coming up to the anniversary. We were lucky enough to get Harley Race to come on my podcast. On the day that Dynamite died, I was lucky because I had Harley beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, previously, and I was able to get in touch with his son, and he was able to get Harley to come on and say a few words about Dynamite's passing. And it's kind of ironic now that poor Harley has kind of passed away too. So it's, that was.
Harley did pass away.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was really ironic that I was able to kind of get that. And that's something that I can always kind of have, you know, whether.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, it was pretty sad times. But
I was lucky enough to get an interview with Harley too when I did one of his camps, but it was short and sweet.
Oh, give me a little bit of a. How do you mean?
Like his answers were very to the point. It was about 15 or 20 minutes long, but I appreciated it.
I was the same because when I asked Harley, I actually got more from Harley. This is actually the truth. Kind of going just a little bit behind the curtain. But only slightly. I remember I got more from Harley on the second interview when we talked before we recorded than when we recorded. And it was like, this motherfucker knows exactly what he's doing.
That reminds me of the interview I did with Danny Spivey. It was like pulling teeth at some points during his interview that I did with him. And as soon as I finished the interview, he told me like three or four really entertaining stories. And I was just thinking to myself, why didn't you tell these stories 5 minutes ago when I was recording?
Yeah, I'm telling you, these old veterans, that's what I'm saying. Like Harley, when I said that old motherfucker, that I meant that in a good way. He was, you know, even up until, you know, a point where his health wasn't great, still, you know, talking like Harley Race, you know. I remember saying to him, if I ever meet you, I'll buy you a beer. And he's like, well, hell, if you mention the word beer, I'm in. I was like, yes. I was like, I'm not going to St. Louis anytime soon, but Jesus H. Christ, it would be awesome to do. But
I did a few camps with him, and he was a great guy.
Yeah, one of the best. One of the greatest world champions of all time.
Oh, yes. Without question, for sure. A true Hall of Famer.
In my opinion, in the top three, without a doubt, for me anyway. So I guess when it came to the Hannibal business and you started, like you mentioned there, like, you know, Jacques Rougeau was one of, like, your third interview. When you started this kind of thing, because I guess maybe before you started this, we had those kind of videos like with RF video and all that kind of thing. Now, the one good thing that RF video had was, especially, was the Iron Sheik stuff, you know? That was kind of their big thing. And some hilarious content, I got to say. But when you got into it, what was your mindset in getting into this? Did you kind of see YouTube as a viable way of making money before the rest of us did? Or was it just something that you wanted to distribute?
It was just that I wanted to help bring more attention to my wrestling company. And I figured,
okay,
let me put these videos out for free. Everyone else is charging for them.
Sure.
Maybe more people will subscribe to my channel and watch the matches. So that's how it started. And at the start, I wasn't really traveling to interview people. I was basically interviewing people that we used on our show in the dressing room before their matches. But now that I've really become known for my interviews, I'll do what I did last weekend, for instance. I traveled to Philadelphia just to get 4 or 5 interviews and attend a convention, not do any wrestling at all. So now I'm more of an interview guy than a wrestler, for sure.
But I bet your back feels better, though.
Yeah, it's easier, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind getting one of the contracts that are being thrown around these days, though. Well, they pass, because I don't believe that's going to last forever.
Well, that's the thing, man. The thing about it is, you can, like, I remember, and I talked to, because I watched your interview with Duke the Dumpster Drosy, and we had him on the podcast last week as well. Great guy, really great guy, very, very honest. I noticed that from yours, because I'd watched your podcast, or sorry, your interview with him beforehand.
Sorry,
I stole some of your material just to get an idea of how he was as a guy. No, but
hey, even Steve Austin has said publicly on his, he said it on his podcast 3 or 4 times that he's watched some of my interviews. And I admire Austin for crediting me, because on the Conrad Thompson, on his podcasts, he often quotes my interviews exactly, and he's never credited me once. So I have a lot of respect for Austin, or people like you that will say, hey, I watched yours to prepare.
Oh, no, 100%, my friend. Like I say, you've been quite a big influence on me, actually, in terms of my podcast, in terms of, like, how I interview people. Again, we come from the same kind of stock in a lot of ways. Obviously, I never won a national championship in amateur wrestling, because we don't have it in Ireland. But I knew
a guy from Canada that also wrestled for Stampede Wrestling. I think he was called Crazy Horse Eddie Mustang.
Okay.
And he competed at the Worlds for Ireland 1 year while I was wrestling in Calgary, because he had Irish in his blood. And I guess because you guys have a very weak team, he managed to go to Ireland, win this tournament that allowed him to compete for Ireland in the Worlds. They were at Madison Square Garden that year. He didn't do well, but I guess you do have an amateur team. You just never hear about it.
Well, we don't. You see, we had, like, when I was growing up, there was one amateur wrestling school. It was called the Hercules Irish Amateur Wrestling School. For me, yeah. I was like, is there a wrestling ring? No. Okay, well, then I don't want to be there. You know, I'm from the same kind of background as you.
You guys would have good amateur wrestlers, though, I would think, because you're known as being great fighters from Ireland. So I'm sure that no quit attitude would serve you guys very well in amateur wrestling. But you're doing just fine in MMA, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I think. Yeah, the fighting Irish attitude is 100%. I mean, you guys over there have it in high school. All we've got basically is rugby, soccer, you know, a bit of basketball for the tall guys that can't get the girls. And
have rugby too. I used to play rugby. We didn't have like an American football team at my high school. In Canada, rugby is more popular. We just don't have like the major teams like you guys have over
there. So it's flip reversed. It's like amateur wrestling and rugby. Yeah. But actually, let's talk, because you're a big fan of MMA, right? You're a big fan of the fighting arts.
I'm actually covering MMA now too. Because,
okay. So let's talk a little bit about MMA just while we're here. Sure. Obviously, you're a boxing fan. You into a bit of the boxing?
Ever since I started training in boxing, I've become a fan of it. Yes.
Yeah, boxing for me was always like the second tier for wrestling, because that was the first kind of sport that I was put into as a kid. So boxing was the first thing. Big fight coming up at the weekend. Wrong circumstances, in my opinion. Anthony Joshua and El Hijo. We got the as a lot of people call him, the Mexican.
Yes.
The Mexican, okay, we'll use that narrative a little bit. The Mexican that also whooped his ass, not just with a lucky punch, but with like a barrage of punches. How do you see this fight going, and what do you think it does for the heavyweight boxing division? Because obviously we've got the rematch now in February Tyson Fury and exactly, yeah. So
I think the Mexican will probably win again, because he seems to, those combinations are great. He might not look like he's in shape, but he's definitely in shape, and he's really a master of boxing.
Yeah.
And supposedly the guy he's fighting had a concussion before their last fight. He was supposedly knocked out in training 2 weeks before the last fight. That is the excuse that's going around anyways. So,
oh, really? With Anthony Joshua?
Yeah. That's what I heard. His camp was saying he was knocked out in training camp 2 weeks before that fight, but he did the fight anyways, so they're using that as one of the reasons why he lost. So we'll see. And as you said, Tyson Fury coming back. Let's hope he doesn't get back into wrestling. I'm sure you saw that match too.
Oh, good. Well, you said the word match. I don't want to... I think we'll use the word match lightly. Yeah, hopefully he doesn't get back involved in wrestling.
I know WWE is making a lot of money off of those Saudi Arabia shows, but I don't know if they're ultimately that great for business, because putting those guys in the ring and making wrestling look so bad, and then he beats Braun after all that.
Well, I mean, you've got AEW making wrestling look bad, so it doesn't really...
Yeah.
You know, we've got. Let me ask you something, okay? Before we get back onto the MMA stuff, because I'd like to finish on that, because obviously it's a pretty big thing, and it does coincide with wrestling in so many ways, shapes and forms. You know what I mean?
We've lost a lot of fans to MMA.
Exactly.
Like, someone like me, I cannot watch WWE. It actually, if I'm in the gym running, for instance, and it is on one of the TVs, I will have to ask them to turn off one of the TVs, because it actually bothers me to watch it. But MMA, I will watch.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, you look at a match, okay, AEW's pay-per-view. This is what bothers me, okay? AEW's pay-per-view, full gear was the last one. The Moxley and, what's his name, Kenny Omega match. Okay.
It looks phony.
But you know what? This is a lights out match, an old school wrestling match that was done in the territories back in the 80s, that is meant to be just a pure straight up fight.
Yeah.
Only one party brought the fight there, as in Moxley. Moxley looked like he wanted a fight. Moxley was looking under the ring for a box of gimmicks, and he picked out, he goes, okay, this'll do. And he comes in and he wants to kill the guy. Yeah. Kenny Omega looks under the ring, but it takes him 10 minutes to lift the curtain, because he's looking out at the crowd and doing all of his little theatrical pantomime type stuff. And then I think that's the only thing holding Kenny Omega back. He doesn't know how to read a crowd, in my opinion. Would you agree?
I haven't seen enough of his matches to know, but I did feel from what I saw of that match that the stunts looked like they were doing pre-planned stunts.
Yeah.
Like, I like hardcore matches like Bruiser Brody, where it's like you just grab whatever you see.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you've planned this in advance. And
yeah, you just want to smack that. The dude over the head. You want to get paid. You want to go home. That's the way it's meant to be. You pick up a paycheck, you know?
I'm not a big fan of, from what I've seen so far, of All Elite Wrestling, but I do hope they stay around just for the more places to work.
For sure, but, for sure. Yeah. And I think Jericho is doing his best to kind of make it a legitimate kind of place.
But he's the biggest name they have, unfortunately. Like, he's the most legitimate guy, with Cody, I guess, as a second. But Cody never had the WWE push that Jericho had.
Yeah, I mean, Jericho's probably one of the biggest names in wrestling in general, in this day and age anyway.
And there's a lot of very green wrestlers I've noticed from the clips I've seen as well. So.
Yeah.
But what they're doing, I don't blame them. You would probably do the same thing. The executives are hiring their friends. You'd probably hire your friends too.
If it meant I could make more money, no.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. And I think that is the problem. I think they're hiring their friends. And I think, you know, Jim Cornette's getting a lot of heat for a lot of things, you know, with the NWA Power thing. You know, it's such a fine line in what you can talk about nowadays. You know that yourself from running your business. There's so many things that you can say and that you can't say without offending somebody. But
that's going to be a big loss to NWA Power. I know a lot of people were only watching it for him. I know that their last week episode without Jim Cornette has by far the lowest viewership, and it was sinking every week anyways, but I think that's going to hurt them. And as I've said, one of my issues with Nick Aldis is he's not actually going around defending the title. He's only defending it in certain situations. Like, he's not coming to Ireland and defending it for the indie companies there. They haven't responded to my request to bring him to Great North Wrestling. So I would have more respect for their champion if he was actually going around facing the top challengers, but
there we go. I'm going to call this out, actually, because I had Dave Marquez on the show about maybe 3-4 weeks ago when it was hot. So there we go. I'm going to put that out to Dave Marquez. Why isn't your champion actually going around and defending it? I mean, it's one thing coming on and pretending to be Ric Flair and using all the Ric Flair, you know, lines, which is basically now what Nick Aldis has become. He's become a pun. I mean, the Twitter handle says it all. What's Kaz and Aldis? Like, I know it's a smart play on words, but at the end of the day, man, if you want to be your own world's champion, then do something new, no?
And help other companies, and maybe if you were go to other companies, they'll get behind you as well. But where I lost respect for Aldis was at the Cauliflower Alley Club this year, which I covered for the Hannibal TV. He gave Dory Funk Jr. his award, but Aldis didn't even bring the title.
He wasn't even wearing the title.
No, and I remember I did an interview with him, and I asked him, are you still the champion? And he looked at me like I was crazy, but he didn't have the title. If you're the world champion and you're presenting an award to one of the greatest world champions of all time, should you not have the title, like, when you're presenting him with this award? I don't know. That's where I thought he was not going to be a good champion, because you need a champion that's really going to put over the title at all costs. But whatever. We'll see what happens.
I would encourage everybody now that has the WWE Network, to watch the first episode of NWA Power. And then when you watch that, go back to the WWE Network and watch the first episode of the NWA Power Hour and see the difference. Because there was a feud right there between Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard. And you get to see real feuds being portrayed and being fulfilled, where you actually were emotionally invested in it versus them. So
and they're doing this comedy stuff too, that actually, when I was interviewing former NWA wrestlers this weekend, I don't know what it is with these comedy vignettes that they're doing, but They had Austin Idol on there with the kayfabe cocktail making fun.
Yeah, but
and, that happened. They used to drug girls.
Yeah, like, and that's a date rape. That's a date rape advert, and yet Jim Cornette gets. I actually turned around to one guy the other day and I said, okay, so if Jim Cornette is racist for that, then you are racist for watching South Park and laughing at Starving Marvin. And I think that's something that was brought up on the Jim Cornette show, and it makes a lot of sense.
I've done security and comedy clubs in recent years. I've been a bouncer for a long time, and what he said is very tame compared to what you'd hear in comedy clubs. So I understand how he made that mistake. I don't believe he was being racist, but they should have edited it out. They had 2 months to edit it out. Yeah. They didn't, so it's on them too.
Yeah, it's 100% on them, in my opinion. It's 100% on them. That's why you have an editor, you know?
I listen to Great North Wrestling. I don't do the commentary, only very rarely, but I'll listen to the commentators, what they say on a match before I post it.
Yeah, that's of just course, just sense. To make sure, just to make sure. But let's get into some of the MMA stuff before we kind of wrap up. Obviously now we've got a big match. We've got the announcement of Conor McGregor is going back against Cowboy. Do you think it's just too long for Conor, or do you think that's the perfect fight for Conor to actually just strike?
Well, he has all the experts around him, and he knows what he's getting himself into.
Yeah.
So I think he's got a good chance in that one. He wants to prove himself for sure.
But when he fights Khabib, he loses again.
Well, that's what the betting people would say, yes. But who knows? Who knows? If he could dedicate himself, you never know. It's still fighting. Fighting, you never know what the outcome could be.
Yeah, no, that is true. That is true. Who's your favorite fighter?
More entertaining than Khabib, in my opinion. So I'm more of a Conor McGregor fan.
You're a McGregor fan, okay. You're more of a McGregor fan than a lot of Irish people over here, believe it or not.
I didn't like what he did to the guy in the pub in that video, but from what I understand, he at least settled that case.
I shouldn't really laugh, but it's kind of, you try my whiskey. No, it's shit. All right, here's a punch.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is very, very stereotypical Irish to do something along them lines, I guess. I don't know. I've never done it. I've never hit an old man.
Well, at least he'll be doing that in a legal way in his next fight if he can stay out of trouble until then.
I think that's the main thing, stay out of trouble. What about you? Who's your favorite fighter? Is there some fighters that you like to see at the moment?
The current fighters. I like just watching the heavyweights in general, but I guess Daniel Cormier, I would say he's one of my favorites.
I like Cormier. Days. Yeah, yeah. I think Cormier's kind of got a bit of a raw deal sometimes on the steroid Jones kind of trials.
Yeah. And he's a great fighter too, considering that the one fight that he failed the drug test on, like they found cocaine in his system, which means that he was partying not too long before the fight, which just shows you
what a badass he is.
A fighter this guy is.
Yeah, dude.
Most people aren't doing that leading up to a fight.
Yeah, so. I mean, well, you know, I'm pretty sure if I give Hannibal some cocaine, he could give Brock Lesnar a good run for his money.
Oh, well, that's a fight I would love to have because I would have nothing to lose in that fight. But I don't think Brock Lesnar is going to step back into an MMA cage again.
And does he need to?
Hager's going to either.
He doesn't need to. Yeah. I guess on the last thing, give me, you know, you've got a lot of fans here in Ireland. I'm not the only one. Plug some stuff and let us know what you've got coming up. And let people know what they can find on Hannibal TV and everything about your company.
Well, we definitely have fans in Ireland because you probably know if you look at the demographics on YouTube, it always says your top five. And the UK is always number third. And Ireland is usually number fourth or fifth. So we definitely have followers in Ireland. We're on Twitter at the Hannibal TV. youtube.com/thehannibalTV, on iTunes, the Great North Wrestling Podcast. I post audio versions of a lot of my interviews, Facebook, Great North Wrestling. But basically, we put match videos from Great North Wrestling and other companies, shoot interview clips, full shoot interviews, and news. I started doing news because I've noticed that some of my news clips get a lot of hits, and it doesn't cost me anything to do news.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that, other than very few exceptions, I pay for the people I interview. Like wrestler, that's one of the reasons I like MMA fighters. They're less greedy than wrestlers. For and sure. I've interviewed now Randy Couture, Tank Abbott, Tito Ortiz, Dan Severn, Ken Shamrock, many of the top MMA fighters. And I find they're easier to deal with than wrestlers. But we have MMA fighters. I've interviewed Larry Holmes, the boxer.
Buster Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes.
So there's a lot. Yeah, subscribe to Hannibal TV.
Guys, you gotta do it, because for me, and when you subscribe, there's literally always something new. If you don't want to listen to the full interview, that's fine. There's literally snippets in there for you to hear the good stuff. For all you beef people that like just to like to eat the beef. We have a saying in Ireland, there's certain people that like to eat the beef, and eat the beef means they just want to hear the gossip, you know?
That's why I do those short interviews, and some people complain that I do the short ones, but oftentimes those short clips will get many more hits than the long ones.
For sure.
And that's because, for instance, they want to hear Jake Roberts talking about Hulk Hogan, but they don't want to listen to a 2-hour Jake Roberts interview, so they'll just search up that. So that's one of the reasons. But speaking of wrestler interviews, we have Jake Roberts, Demolition, the Honky Tonk Man, which has about 2 million hits now, Superstar Billy Graham, Psycho Sid, a couple interviews with Sid, Dan the Beast Severin, the list goes on and on. Billy Jack Haynes I just interviewed, Shane Douglas. So many great interviews on there. My ultimate one is Jesse Ventura.
Yes.
I hope to get him next year.
If you get him, my friend, hit me up and let me at least put one question, yeah?
For sure.
I don't know what the question is yet, because I'm a big fan. Big, big fan of Jesse Ventura, but that is a straight shooting motherfucker.
Yeah, he's my dream interview, and I think I'll be able to pull it off next year.
You will. I've no doubt in you, my friend.
If RF can get him, he's a little bit more controversial than I am. I'm sure I can get Jesse Ventura.
That's a fact. Listen, Hannibal, I really, really want to thank you once again for taking your time out of your very busy schedule to come on and talk to me. And it really does help me out a lot. And it shows what kind of guy you are, because you know what it's like to be starting out and, you know, trying to help out guys that want to do podcasts, what they want to do, you know, YouTube videos and stuff. So I think it really lends a lot of love in your favor to show that you are the kind of guy that will help out people. And I just wanted to kind of broadcast that a little bit. So thank you.
My pleasure. And I didn't have time to listen to anything that you've done so far, because you've only reached out a little while ago. But I'll check out some of your interviews for sure in the coming weeks.
Thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Subscribe to the Hannibal TV, everyone.
Thank you all for joining me in the Dynamo Kelly once again. But for this week, that is all she wrote. We will see you again next week. And until then, it is Dynamo over and out.